WNYC Studios is supported by New York State COVID Alerts. New York, now you can add your phone to stop the spread. Get COVID-19 exposure alerts and help protect your community while maintaining your privacy. Go to ny.gov/COVID alerts to add your phone today.
WNYC is teaming up with NPR to bring you a new daily podcast, Consider This. We'll bring you the biggest news stories and what's happening in our community to help you make sense of the day. Subscribe to Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we've talked on this program, of course, about the Central Park Five case, in which Raymond Santana, Kevin Richardson, Corey Wise, Yusef Salaam, and Antron McRae, five kids at the time, ages 14, 15, and 16, were wrongfully convicted of the brutal sexual assault of 28-year-old Trisha Mailey, who became known as the Central Park Jogger, and sentenced in a range from 6 to 13 years behind bars. They were later exonerated by a confession and DNA evidence showing someone else committed that rape. Ava DuVernay's new Netflix miniseries, When They See Us, takes a closer look at the power of media and the power of prosecutors in cases of youth justice. The prosecutor in that case, Linda Fairstein, once a public hero for going hard against domestic violence, is a main target of the film and comes under new scrutiny, though she defends her actions to this day. Joining me now are Jamie Floyd, WNYC's All Things Considered host, with her other hat on, her legal analyst hat, and Natalie Byfield, sociology and anthropology professor at St. John's University in Queens, and author of the book Savage Portrayals, Race, Media, and the Central Park Jogger Story. Hi, Jamie, and welcome to WNYC, Dr. Byfield.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's an honor to be on with Dr. Byfield.
And, of course, we've known for years about the wrongful convictions. Our show and many others did programming around the 30th anniversary of the attack just this spring. So, Jamie, what's new in the Netflix series?
Well, I'll tell you what really resonated for me. I've been covering this case since the crime happened. I was in law school in 1989. But I know the exonerees here, and I want to say their names again. Antron McRae, Yusef Salaam, Corey Wise, Raymond Santana, and Kevin Richardson. And there were other arrestees then, as Dr. Byfield's book so eloquently portrays. It was a dragnet of the park. Look for black men, and brown men swept up in it. But what Ava DuVernay is able to do here is bring us the real humanity of these young men and their families, and a community under siege in 1989 and 1990, and then what destruction is fraught on these families and these young men, lives robbed of full fruition as they spend their lives, their young lives, behind bars. And even though I followed the case, Brian, now for 30 years, I graduated law school while these young men were being tried and convicted. I know them personally as adult men. I never knew them as young men. I didn't fully appreciate their youthful humanity in the way she's able to bring it to the screen, as you really only can in a fictional portrayal if you don't know them personally. Mm-hmm. And she's able to bring a whole new audience to this story that perhaps those of us who are not justice insiders did not know the story. And I've heard many young people say, I really didn't know this story until now. And so I'm very grateful to her for that.
Let me play a clip, and then Dr. Byfield will bring you into this. A clip from the miniseries where some of the boys' mothers are discussing the trial with two lawyers. Mm-hmm. Let's take a listen. One of the lawyers is the first voice we'll hear.
Look, if the jury sees all five of those boys together, they're going to think Wolfpack, it's no good, I agree, but the prosecution's never going to agree to five separate trials.
Yusef never made a tape. He never signed a statement. I got him out of there before Fairstein and those cops could trap him.
So you're trying to say it's our fault our boys are on tape?
I didn't say that.
No, don't say that. You know,
one thing we need to do more of is control the narrative. People like Al Sharpton can help with that. Oh, I don't know. I think it's a mistake to make this about race.
Sweet Jesus.
What? Why?
Tell that to Trump.
Exactly.
Tell that to Trump. And, of course, Trump was a factor, Dr. Byfield, in the media at that time.
Absolutely. He played a very important role in ginning up public sentiment against these children. This is part of this is a fact that people oftentimes have ignored over the years, that they were children. And I think it was so important in Ava DuVernay's When They See Us Netflix series to highlight that element of their lives, that these were children swept up in this type of police dragnet. And the way in which the police descended on the community at that moment to almost make sure that someone paid for this.
Mm-hmm. But if Donald Trump has been a villain in this story for a long time, the focus on Linda Fairstein is relatively new at this level of high profile. And the line in that clip from the series that we just played, I got it from one of the mothers, I got him out of there before Fairstein and those cops could trap him. Can we talk about how Prosecutor Linda Fairstein is portrayed in this series?
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to talk about her portrayal in this, because I think what we've seen before is not that she has never been seen in this level of high profile. It's been clear from the very beginning her role in this by way of mainstream media, but we've only ever gotten an understanding of her role from mainstream media. So to get this rendition from Ava DuVernay at this moment of the impact of the case on the lives of all the people involved, the teens, now young men, and their families, and to see the role, her role in the devastation of their lives, this is what's becoming much more clear to people. And so what happened before in terms of her portrayal was that the closeness between the prosecutors, the police, and the media hid that, because that never became a part of the story. And hiding that is what the media did so well then, and in many respects continues to do now, because she constantly still goes out there and has been going out there for the last 30 years to describe them as innocent.
Riding on the coattails.
I'm sorry, to describe them as guilty. Let's make that clear.
Riding on the coattails of these convictions.
Exactly.
Riding on the coattails of these convictions to a successful career as a crime novelist. And she was on the scene of the crime, as was portrayed in this film. And of course, this was fictionalized, and there were some things that were a bit different from what happened in real life, as is necessary in a dramatic portrayal. You only have a few hours.
Exactly.
This was a 30-year story.
Exactly.
But she, Linda Fairstein, was there in the park in the wee hours of the morning before anyone else got there. There was the battle, as we saw in the portrayal, with, spoiler alert, folks who are listening, with Homicide, about who would take the case. And that became a key and critical decision on the part of Morgenthau, who punted, the district attorney at the time, punted. And Fairstein gets the case. And despite claiming to be a victim's rights advocate, desperately concerned for rape victims in this city.
There was a rape victim in that case.
Yes, of course there was a rape victim in that case, but there was a rapist on the loose. And he continued to rape women in the months during which Fairstein and Lederer, the ADA who tried the case, and the investigators on this case are pursuing these boys, 14, 15, and one only 16 years old. They're pursuing this case while the real rapist is out on the streets raping women and murdering one woman. In the very same months that they are ginning up public antagonism against these innocent boys.
Listeners, I don't know if anybody out there right now has seen Ava DuVernay's Netflix miniseries, When They See Us, about the Central Park Five and Central Park jogger case. We can take one or two phone calls. Our time is going so quickly. But call in if you want to ask a question of our legal analyst as well as All Things Considered host Jamie Floyd, who, as she says, has been covering this case for all these years, and St. John's sociology and anthropology professor Natalie Byfield, author of the book Savage Portrayals, Race, Media, and the Central Park Jogger Story. And I want to stay on Fairstein for a minute, because this is the part that's really breaking out as a new debate or new layers of debate around her. A lawyer for her has issued a statement accusing Netflix and Ava DuVernay of, quote, misrepresenting the facts in an inflammatory and inaccurate manner, unquote, and threatening to take legal action. By way of context on her earlier career, the New York Times reported yesterday that for much of her life, Linda Fairstein was widely viewed as a law enforcement hero for being one of the first prosecutors to take sex crimes, including domestic sex crimes, as seriously as she did. But if she still asserts the guilt of the Central Park Five, I want to play a clip from this show from 2010 that shows that she is in a different position from the actual Manhattan DA, Robert Morgenthau, at the time, who came on the show in 2010, and I asked him about getting that wrong, and he said this.
This was not a happy day. This prisoner up there on the Canadian border said, I did it, and I did it alone. We first thought the guy just wants a free trip to New York, but we had his DNA taken, and it confirmed that he was the person who did it.
Pretty direct declarative statement from Manhattan DA at the time, Robert Morgenthau. Professor Byfield, how do you understand the difference then between Morgenthau and the prosecutor on the case, Linda Fairstein?
Linda Fairstein is very typical of many prosecutors. They never admit when they're wrong, and they're wrong oftentimes, but they refuse to admit that they're wrong. In addition, she has a personal investment in continuing the story, the lie that they are guilty. And we have to explore this personal investment in this, because her whole career had been wrapped up in getting one of these early sex crimes units and heading this unit. And these sex crimes units are very important things in the life of the women's movement to address sexual assault, violence against women. But it was not supposed to turn into something where their only concern was sexual assault and violence against women. They should all be, why? Because all kinds of women are sexually assaulted and experience violence. And when you only turn it into one type of way in which you can approach these cases, mm-hmm. these so-called legitimate rape cases, you ignore various and sundry other cases, particularly cases that involve violence, sexual violence against women of color. Mm-hmm. And so one of the reasons they were so invested in this case is because Trisha Miley is an affluent white woman. And so in this context, the case was about race. Right. Even in the aspect of the case in which they were fighting sexual assault, it was about only some sexual assaults deserve this level of importance. And so the case, every aspect of this case has been about race. And I was so glad that you played that particular segment that you played, because I think it's really important that the discussion now amongst the families, and they're just basic understanding that this is about how race is organized in the society, who mm-hmm. gets to be seen as important, who gets to be seen as a victim, and just the automatic go-to position that the only people who could have been responsible for this was this group of Black and Latina teens.
Which is why it's called When They See Us. When they see us, they see fill in the blank. And it's very clear in this film what we've known all along, that Linda Fairstein's office, Elizabeth Lederer, and Robert Morgenthau, who I knew, they did not see their role and responsibility, nor did NYPD. They did not protect and serve us. They did not exist to protect and serve us. She was not in pursuit of justice. And I know the libel laws, Brian, and the slander laws.
I'm very careful.
Well, I've been thinking about this case for a very long time.
Must feel that she was in pursuit of justice.
No, she was not. Pursuit of truth and justice is one thing. Politics is something else. And there's a very key line in the film where, and we don't know if Elizabeth Lederer actually said this, because again, this is a dramatic portrayal, which gives Ava DuVernay a lot more license than it gives me.
Right.
So she says in the film to the legal aid attorney, this is no longer about justice, it's about politics. And this is where prosecutors go wrong, because I've met prosecutors like Ronnie Earl in Texas, who had a very similar case where there was an exoneration, and he realized, oh my goodness, we convicted two minors of a murder they did not commit. I'm opening up every single one of my 400 cases because we got it wrong in those two cases. That is not what these prosecutors have done. Prosecutors who care about justice acknowledge when they make a mistake. They don't go to trial with inconsistent statements from minors, a lack of DNA evidence, no weapon, no physical evidence tying boys to a crime. That's when they went to trial, not now 30 years later. That is not pursuit of justice. That is a reason to dismiss a case 30 years ago.
Peter in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Oh, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. You know, I've followed this peripherally over the years, and it is a horrible thing if, in fact, those kids were innocent. But from my understanding, there was a lot of hooliganism going on at that time in the park in various parts. People were getting attacked, bones broken. And from my understanding, and I know this is the confusion of all this, that the claim is that some of these kids had dirt from the area of the rape, and there was stuff under the fingernails. I think what Trump did is despicable, but putting out an ad the way he
right.
did without...
And that piece of evidence has been, and Peter, I'm going to cut in just for time, but that piece of evidence has been discussed previously. Dr. Byfield?
Yes. You may be getting your information from the news coverage, and that's a problem. It's a problem because in the context of the news coverage, what we saw time and again was the introduction of materials, introduction of so-called facts that were just not facts. There was stories that referenced a knife that suddenly then stories about knives disappeared because here you have a knife being referenced in one story that a knife was used, and in another story, some other type of weapon was used, and then suddenly stories about that disappeared. And there was never any systematic way in which the news made sure, the news media in covering the case made sure that they had any accurate details about exactly what happened in the park that night. And There are a couple of things that you can always pay attention to. One of the things is this: go back to the DNA evidence and you think about that DNA evidence. The coverage of the DNA evidence has been bizarre to me because in the context of that coverage of the DNA evidence, the news media followed this line that the DNA evidence was inconclusive. And when you see the reports about this inconclusive DNA evidence, they give the impression that there was something wrong with the test. Granted, it was the early period in the development of DNA testing. But let's be clear, what they meant by inconclusive, they, the news media, was that the DNA didn't match. And there's a difference. And it was not clear to the news audience that the DNA didn't match.
Get another caller.
Just say one thing about what happened in the park that night. There were a lot of young men in the park that night, as the film portrays and as was acknowledged at the time. It is the role of police and prosecutors to match the right facts to the right defendant, not to match the wrong facts to the wrong defendant. You don't have a responsibility to prove yourself innocent in our system of justice.
In other words, they may have been doing some things.
I don't think they were necessary. No. They have a right to be in Central Park or anywhere in this city or in these United States without being charged with a crime they did not commit. And that's what essentially happened here.
In Boulder, Colorado, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi,
So first, I just want to say that the film is absolutely terrifying, and I think it's one of those things where you can sort of gauge your own privilege. Like, if you're watching it, obviously anybody can feel empathy for the victims of the prosecution. But if you're truly terrified by that, then you know that you, if you're not terrified, then you know that you're in a position of privilege. But what I wanted to ask is, with regard to Corey Wise, irrespective of guilt and irrespective of his age, we know that what's depicted about his life in prison is a pretty frequent occurrence. And so how can you send somebody, let's take Corey Wise, but even if he was older, because I would hate for the conversation to boil down to the fact that he's 16. Let's say he's 18. But if he's somebody who you know will be abused in prison, somebody who's vulnerable, how can you put somebody like that in prison when you know what's going to happen to them?
And as an adult, and forgive me on, but we've only got a minute in the show, and Jamie, new laws emerged after this case that caused more children to stand trial as adults.
Yes, that is correct, which we are reevaluating. I want to say also we now have requirements Governor Cuomo just signed a law about videotaping interrogations, not just when you want to, but throughout the interrogation. But we have to examine why we have this prison industrial complex that affects predominantly Black and brown men, as Michelle Alexander has written, as Dr. Byfield has written. We must examine this legacy of Jim Crow and slavery, which continues to haunt us, Doctor.
Yes.
And we have 30 seconds. Anything you want to say?
Just that in the wake of this case, there was a sea change in juvenile justice laws that increased the amount, increased or changed the laws essentially across the country in something like 44 to 47 states that allowed for juveniles to be incarcerated with adults.
And there we have to leave it.
More on All Things Considered.
Today on
4 o'clock.
On the When They See Us miniseries.
Yes.
All right. More with Jamie at 4 o'clock on All Things Considered. Jamie Floyd, WNYC's legal analyst as well as host of All Things Considered, and Natalie Byfield, sociology and anthropology professor at St. John's and author of the book Savage Portrayals, Race, Media, and the Central Park Jogger's Story. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.